Hi, this is Tiffany. I just wanted to drop in to our podcast today and acknowledge COVID-19. The Digital to Learn podcast has pre-recorded episodes, and we do plan to continue on with those during this time. But we also just want to stop and acknowledge everything that you're going through and let you know that we're all in this together. And we hope that now more than ever, you find our content about digital learning relevant and useful in your daily lives. Everybody stay safe, and we just want to wish you some happy listening.
This moment is really going to create, I think, an affordability race, or a pursuit to the race to the bottom. And it's going to be interesting to see the degree to which institutions get into that, because it was a race to the top for a long time, but I think society has shifted around. And you're going to see a race at the bottom. And it could become one that is laying a lot of institutions to waste because they can't keep up.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones, sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hi, Brad.
Great to be here.
We're here for part two of our episode with Andy Miller. Welcome, Andy.
Thank you. I look forward to the discussion.
So it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, your dissertation was done on a residential campus. Is that correct?
It measured both thriving on a residential campus and those students who are affiliated with the residential experiences that they would have in extension site. So two different populations of students.
Okay, well, I was just wondering how that translated to your work now with non-traditional online students. How are you able to help them feel connected, or how are you able to focus on affiliate-based education in an online environment, and is it any different?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing is it justified this idea of an affinity-based education model where the education is local and it's relevant to where they're at, and it's also very affordable, right? I think that's really all those terms go together: affordable, relevant, local. And that idea from the study that was really pronounced and demonstrated really demonstrated that this model is something we should continue to develop. So that sort of carried me into this next season as we're relates to partnership education, that we can find groupings of students who exist either at their church or at their nonprofit or any other kind of organization who would want to learn together, but also have community together. And that really has sort of informed the way in which I look at innovation today. And I would say this, it is dangerous to innovate for the sake of innovation. I think a lot of schools today think that that's what they need to do. Or we need to get innovative and do this or that and add enrollment and financials to the institution, but that's dangerous. And I would say we must innovate for the sake of educating more students well and in a manner that leads to their success in the college environment, because otherwise it's abuse, right? And I think that that's the question we have to ask ourselves. And really what was important for me in my study is I had the opportunity to lead the church-based extension site model. But I had to say to myself, is this truly a valid model for how we should do higher education in the future? And it demonstrated that. And so today it informs much of what I do and helps inform some of the practices that we implement there at those partnerships.
That's great. Thank you. We know that you were interested in innovation in the future of higher ed long before COVID-19. And we've touched a little bit on this already, but how have your beliefs about the future of higher ed changed, or have they stayed the same as a result of the pandemic?
Yeah, I think COVID-19 is just further emphasizing my concerns about where the state of higher education is at this point, both at the private level and the public. A great article that came out recently was Leading Beyond the Blizzard from Andy Crouch at the Team of Praxis. And to summarize that article, basically the COVID-19 may be more than a brief blizzard, if we're using sort of Indiana terms here. But it's actually an entry into this, what they call the Little Ice Age, and a metaphor, if you will, for a large-scale event that reshapes society. And so they would say that every business organization is now in a startup mode and need to reconfigure and in some ways dismantle how they've done business up to this point. And I find really great applications of this article to higher education, because COVID-19 has really stressed and created more fractures in a really fractured system. And I wrote a real quick article on LinkedIn about this, because I said, you know, there's several things I see. Number one, I think traditional enrollment is going to continue to decline. You know, parents are concerned, students are concerned, is my student going to be given exposure to the disease or to the virus simply because they go to the college campus? Are they going to be sent home early and I'm going to lose financial investment by having them go there? And so there's going to be a decline in traditional enrollment, at least for the next year. We're already seeing it in the number of applications and deposits at those places. Federal financial aid applications are down. And a lot of students, frankly, are just uncommitted. The second thing we're going to see, I think, out of this is that education is going to become more local and contextual. You know, I quoted earlier this statistic that, you know, students on average are traveling 50 miles or less to go to college. I think that number is about to shrink dramatically in the coming 12 to 18 months, as their parents are concerned about, how do I keep my young person around a supportive community and support system that they can be around? The other thing I would say is it's going to be more affinity-based, going back to some of the partnership education that I've been a part of. And that's because people have an inherent trust in their local organization, as opposed to a distant college. And so there is this trust that's built. And by virtue of that, education needs to go to where they're at, as opposed to them coming to us. The other piece that I would say here, and I alluded to this earlier, is it's higher education is just frankly going to become more digital, but connected. I think that there is this often very dangerous move to remote learning, online learning. We've seen that. It's very powerful and palpable. And people are doing it because, well, they had to. But I think the question that it begs is, one, is that of quality? But two, what are the opportunities that were demonstrated in that? And I think that bringing things like Zoom and Google Meet and other sort of cohort-based community into an online platform are things that we can share in the true online learning space. And the last thing I would say is that this moment is really going to create, I think, an affordability race, or, you know, a pursuit to the race to the bottom. And it's going to be interesting to see the degree to which institutions get into that, because it was a race to the top for a long time. But I think society has shifted around and you're going to see a race to the bottom. And it could become one that is laying a lot of institutions to waste because they can't keep up. I think those themes are really what I see coming out of COVID-19, but we'll see. More to come. You know, every day something new emerges.
So when you say race to the bottom, what does that mean?
Yeah, we've seen it in other industries where the pricing model has been going cheaper and cheaper. Well, when you go cheaper on price, you have to go cheaper on quality as well. And so the question is the degree to which institutions will continue to race to the bottom in terms of affordability. How far will we go in order for a college education to be discounted?
Okay. Makes sense. So as we look forward to the future, and I'm guessing at least that faculty are beginning to dabble more with technology in COVID-19 land than they have in the past, out of necessity, not preference. But perhaps they will say, hey, maybe this will work. Maybe I can use this in the future. So what do you see as the emerging technology for the future in higher ed?
And I would say that we always used to say in marketing and higher education, content is king. But I've seen the shift even on my short time in higher education that the king now is access and content is the queen. And there's this sense that we as higher education professionals need to ask the question, at what point are we providing access over content? Because content is everywhere. You can get a Udemy course, a Coursera course, edX, all these basic groups. Information is everywhere. But what makes higher education different and should make it different is the access. Access to peers, access to leaders, access to experts, to the faculty. And I think we have to ask that question as we move forward, is the more we can do in higher education to create community and connection among these groups is only going to do one thing, improve the student learning experience. And to do that in a way that makes sense and is affordable for folks. So to your question, I think the emerging technology is here. It's just how we apply the existing technologies.
Yep.
I believe that that's where we're going to see emerging rather than a creation.
I saw a survey asking students what was their biggest concern about moving off their campus into an online venue. more than half of them said interactions with my classmates. Mm-hmm. Kind of seeing online learning as a remote, distant land where you don't talk to anybody, which in some cases may be true. But I also wonder at what point in time will just doing Zoom conversations get old and boring? And are there ways that we can find to enhance that experience even further than just having everybody's picture on the screen at the same time?
Well, Brad, you know, that you raise a good point, because I think we've all sat on a residential campus, or a good majority of us have, and have sat in classes for an hour and 15 minutes and wondered, why do I need to do this, right? So, you know, I think we can say the same thing about traditional residential education. And there are some experiences on that campus that are transformational. And we have to ask the question, well, why are they transformational? It's not because somebody sat in front of a class and lectured on it. It's because that there was engagement and the right sort of things. And maybe it was that they lectured, but they were profound for some reason. And we have to ask that question. So, you know, I think that it's emerging, like I said earlier, of the technologies. There are some things we're doing, adaptive content release and artificial intelligence, that will make it easier for certain kinds of content to be delivered, certain things like case study analysis and so forth to come to the fore in ways that we've not been able to in previous life. But the idea of community and connection are such age-old kind of ways of teaching that they're philosophical in nature, all the way back to Plato and Aristotle, right? That how do I create community and create the sort of connection, but in a way that is meaningful? And so I think we can look at both modalities, whether it's residential education or online, and say there's good and bad in all of it. And how do we bring the best out of it and bring it together in one place?
Excellent answer.
Well, we're looking to your LinkedIn for answers as we move through this disruptive era, but what are some of your sources of inspiration or resources that you look to as you make the transition?
Yeah, I try to look outside the higher education market in terms of how to look at it, because when everybody's looking at the same thing, I think that's a dangerous you know, problem, because then we're all looking at the same data set and we're all making the same conclusions. And so I try to look at other things. I'm very interested in Bureau of Labor Statistics and where that's moving. I also look at the Census Bureau. Today, there was some great research that's been coming out. They're the household pulse surveys, and they're looking on a weekly basis at what are people saying in the midst of COVID-19. And so, you know, there's some immediate data that we can look at. There's also some long-range sort of impetus, some of the forward-thinking research that's out there that is necessary, I think, for our environment. But higher education folks, there's some other folks in that market, obviously in the student success venue, Lori Schreiner, as well as others who are researching it from sort of the corporate level, Paul Alexander and some of the others. Another group is Georgetown University, that has the Center for Workplace or Workforce and Education. They're a great resource. But I think we have to look in higher education more broadly and say, how is our work going to impact how folks manage post-COVID-19, how they leave after they've graduated from us? And so those are the sources that I look to the most.
That's excellent. Thank you.
Wendy, it's been great to have you on the Digital to Learn podcast. Thank you for sharing your expertise and predictions for the future. And we're going to hold you accountable for each and every one of those.
Thank you. Well, it's been a pleasure to be here. Thank you again for the invitation, and I look forward to talking more with you in the future.
Great. Thanks a lot.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us for another episode of Digital to Learn.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.